You are listening to the Mother of All Podcasts.
Each week, we will break down a popular topic revolving around parenting and relate it back to our own lives. We're not parenting experts, but we're living out parenting each day and sharing our experiences along the way.
Hey everyone, so if you haven't already heard, Taylor and I are affiliates for the Go Guarded company. The way I learned about them is because I am a runner and I love anything that can make me feel comfortable on my run. So Jody Fisher is fabulous. We had an episode with her previously. She talks about the company and all the wonderful products that she has for anybody who's a runner, likes to be active, out, hiking, walking across campuses, walking to your car, any way to keep females and males safe in any instance. So go ahead and go to our show notes, click the link, use the code M-O-T-H-E-R in all caps. So that's mother in all caps for 10% off. And you will love this. I promise. I promise. You'll love it.
Wonder Year, a guide to long-term family travel and world schooling. On this week's episode, we meet Angela, Annika, and Julie, the three authors of Wonder Year. All three women have separately traveled with their families and children, either nationally or internationally, for 12 months or longer. Today, we are getting to hear all of the stories and their own perspectives and reasoning for why each woman chose to travel long-term with their families. And it is truly fascinating to hear their stories and encouragement to others who might be considering traveling full-time with their families. They bring a wealth of knowledge related to planning and executing a successful long-term travel and world schooling, and we hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed talking with them. Welcome back to the Mother of All Podcast. This is one of your hosts, Taylor.
And Sam.
And today we have three very special guests joining us today. We have Angela, Annika, and Julie joining us, and they are the authors of the book, The Wonder Year. And it is a book that's all about world schooling and traveling with children, and it's a guide, and it's kind of, from what I've read, it's kind of like a new kind of thing because not a whole lot of people have written a book like this. Am I right?
Yes. So,
welcome to all three of you. We're very excited to have you on our show. Much.
Nice to be here.
Yeah. So to start off, Angela, we can start with you. If you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and your travel experience and what made you want to travel with your family.
Sure. So, I'm Angela. I'm originally from Ohio, and I've lived in quite a few places across the U.S. My family was living in San Francisco Bay Area for almost two decades before we started our Wonder Year. And my husband and I have two boys. They were 9 and 12 when we started world schooling, and prior to that, they had been in public schools. Just briefly on the professional side, I have an engineering degree and an MBA, and I used to work in healthcare and biotech. And essentially what happened for our family was my husband and I loved to travel. We'd always try to make it a priority. We brought the kids along right from the start when they were really little. We never had enough time for it, and our lives got really, really busy in the Bay Area, and we decided to shift gears. So we started exploring the idea of relocating and maybe some taking some time off in between before we moved somewhere new, and that grew into the idea of a Wonder Year.
Very cool. Okay, Annika, if you would like to share a little bit about yourself and what made you want to travel.
Sure, yeah. I met my husband, we knew we wanted to travel. And it was really formed from our prior experiences. I worked as a student travel guide, actually, when I was in my 20s with a place called Where There Be Dragons. And I was leading teens and some tweens on these very epic adventures through Thailand and Laos. And I just saw what an impact that had. I also met families in Southeast Asia, where I used to live and work, that were traveling with their very young kids. And it didn't even dawn on me that you could do that kind of travel with kids. And once I saw it, I said, I want to do that. And my husband, when I met him, held travel in the same regard. So we knew we wanted to do it even before we had kids. I was a teacher. I first taught in the Peace Corps, and then I taught in public schools in California. And I had been a stay-at-home mom. I have three kids. And when we left, they were 8, 9, and 12. And before kind of getting back into the work world, I knew it would be really great to do this year and then really jump back into working. So that's a little bit about me.
Great.
That's really neat.
Yes. And Julie, how about you?
Thanks. Hi. I'm also from Ohio, but Angela didn't and I didn't meet till we were in Boulder, Colorado. And I had a really formative experience as a youngster when my dad and my brand new stepmom took us on an epic road trip to try to blend these two families. They had seven kids between them. And they're like, hey, let's get a big old RV and travel around the US West. So it was an amazing adventure. And I think it really laid down this sort of intrigue with travel. And then as a young adult, my professional interests were environmental science and forest ecology, sustainability, and all of that kind of led me toward being a lover of outdoor adventure. And I met my husband in Colorado, and we started talking about a trip together really early in our relationship, and kind of knew things just kept building. And we had these little signs, like friends did it, and we were reading about it. And I think the kicker was when my son, we just have one child and one dog. By third grade, I kind of noticed like how much he thrived outside of a traditional classroom. He was just really like super gross motor kid. You know, he just liked to build things and jump around, and he thrived so much. It sort of put the wheels in motion for us. Like, let's do this. Let's get outside the four walls of the classroom and see what we can do. And it just started to build, and we took about a year to plan, but those were the influences, and everything kind of came together in that year. So that's kind of the background.
I have a question. How old was your son when you first decided to travel?
He was 8 when we left, and then he turned 9 like a month into the trip. And we were gone for 13 months.
Oh, wow. I'm seeing a trend. All of your children, they were not really, really young, but they were 8, 9, 10, 12, around that age. How do you feel like they transitioned from either public school or in the classroom to world schooling?
Well, I can take that real quick. And I will say, so when we did our year, we went to 7 countries and 3 continents. They were 8, 9, and 12. But I did, my middle daughter is adopted from China. So we actually we had all three kids in China when they were 2, 3, and 5. So they were young. Okay. And we traveled for, a full month in China. So it can be done with the young kids. I just wanted to say that one. And then jumping to the full year that we did, my kids were actually in an alternative school. They were in a Waldorf school. And returning, they all really wanted to go to a more mainstream school. So it's not what you would expect. They did kind of have, my oldest was a little behind in math, and we got a tutor right when we returned. We had like a month before school started. We hired a tutor, and within 2 months of school, she was completely caught up. So those things that I was so stressing that she was going to be really behind, because math is not my forte, and kids catch up so fast.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, over the summer, kids do regress a little bit when they are out for over the summer. So I'm sure, with the catch up that they do at the beginning of the school year too, it probably helped.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. I like to tell the story that my kids were out of school for 2 years, actually. And I was so worried because we were moving to a new school district. So we relocated. So we were kind of flying blind. I didn't know what a school would expect from us. So I had sort of a scramble before enrolling my kids when we landed in Boulder. And I was trying to gather like and document all the things we'd done. I was not ahead of the game on that. And then when I went to register them, all they asked for was their birth dates. They didn't care that we hadn't been in school for 2 years. They didn't want anything from me, and they just slotted right into their grades. And like Ani, particularly my younger son, had a few things to catch up on, but it wasn't like, oh, you missed all of fifth grade. Wow, we're really behind here. It wasn't anything like that. We had a little supplemental work to do just at home, just him and me. And then he was level set.
And Johnny was in public school, and then he basically did fourth grade on the road. And we used very little structure for the year. I don't know. He slid right into fifth grade, not really missing a beat. And I like to giggle that he, you know, he won the geography bee and went to the state finals because he was really good in geography at the end of our trip. But he didn't miss a beat. So it felt really easy. Maybe that was a sweet spot, just transitioning in.
Now, if you don't mind if I add just one thing, because you mentioned that our kids were so similar in ages. We noticed that right away when we started talking together as authors. Yeah. So one of the things we made sure we did in this book in general, but particularly around ages of kids, was we interviewed dozens of other families so that we could get perspective. And it's the full gamut. We interviewed people traveling with infants. I interviewed a family who had a baby on the road, was seeking maternity care as they traveled, all the way to the other end of navigating kids coming out of world schooling and applying to college. So it can be done at all ages.
Yeah. Okay. So for the listeners who have been hearing the word world schooling a lot since we've started, can you guys explain that term? To them.
Bill, are you doing that one?
Sure, I can take that. So world schooling is kind of what it sounds like. It's learning in the world, but it's really direct interaction with the world. And unlike traditional classroom, there's direct engagement through travel, through nature learning, through cultural immersion. And so there's that engagement and the exchange, which is giving kids a perspective and a depth of their understanding of much broader places. There's a lot of different ways to do it. There's really no handbook. It's very open. It could be something like learning how to tap a rubber tree in Thailand. Or it could be visiting the avalanche dogs at a ski area to learn about avalanche rescue. Any experience through world schooling can be turned into an educational opportunity. And so we find that it's really what happens at the edge of your engagement with the world. And so we, you know, we say in the book that there's really no dogma. There's no institution that you can register with. There is some alignment with homeschooling. And so like the legality of it sort of hinges on what a state requires for homeschooling kids. That's what you would use to understand what do I need to do to take my kid out of school. And every parent or legal guardian has the right to take their child out of school and teach them in alternate ways. And how that happens is up to the parent. They become the principal educator. In a world schooling scenario, there's all kinds of teachers though, and there are all kinds of resources that continue to grow, and the offerings are amazing. We can talk about that later if you want. But to answer the question, it's an approach to education that seeks to maximize how much your kids see in the world and learn from it. And one of the really cool things, and I could talk about this all day, so I'll stop myself, but one of the amazing things is the opportunity for adults and children to learn side by side. And I think for all of us, that was one of the profound one of the amazing parts of our trips was we were in it together, learning together.
Love that.
I know, me too. I think it'd be a lot of fun learning something new with your kids, because I feel like your kids just think that you know it all, and showing them that there's more to learn teaches them that there's always room for growth.
Yes. Yeah.
I like that.
Now, one thing that you mentioned was at the edge of your world, and that made me think of the Where There Be Dragons. I was looking at their website. Mm-hmm. Because that's a pretty cool name.
I know, I thought
one, the same. I was like, what is that? And I looked that up. So Anakin, can you give a little bit of a description about, I know you gave a little bit of a description earlier, but I really liked how they talked about how, you know, the map makers, it says that the map makers once drew dragons to represent lands unknown. And I like how they talk about immersion and getting involved in the areas that you're traveling to. When you worked with this company, was that something that you were able to experience? And how did that instill your joy of traveling with your family?
Great question. And so Where There Be Dragons is literally what they used to write on the edge of the maps. And so working for, we call it Dragons for short, we were always trying to get off the beaten path. And, you know, there's this discussion about the difference between a tourist and a traveler. Let me see if I get this right. The tourist wants to go to see something. A traveler goes and they just see what they see. They're not going with intent. They're kind of stepping onto the road with curiosity. And I think that that is really that student travel company's ethos. And I really wanted to adopt that in our year. And so what that really meant was, you know, those serendipitous moments, like sitting down and having a conversation with someone, you know, in the middle of an alley, like we were sitting on like styrofoam coolers talking to people in China about kind of what makes us happy. And we had somebody who could translate for us. That's not in the guidebooks. Like, that's not a place that you're supposed to go, right? And so I think that's the difference with traveling with that open-ended mindset. It's both literal and physical. Sorry, literal and metaphorical. It's really going where it's there's a bit more mystery. So I will say, when we were in China, that was just 1 month of our 13-month trip. I kept saying, I want a dragon's month with my family. And I know enough about China that I cannot get off that beaten path without really strong language skills. And so we put something up on the admin board at Dragons, and we just, you know, hired somebody through Zoom who worked for Dragons who led us for the month. And that was, it was fantastic. And I highly recommend it. But really going with somebody who has cultural sensitivity is another part of kind of having a quote-unquote dragon's trip.
That sounds
so cool. Can I add one thing? I don't want to give the impression that, you know, you have to go like to the farthest ends of the world to have a wonder year. Like, it can happen right in the backyard. It's kind of an attitude and a mindset of discovery, of asking questions and seeing what opens up. So it might be at the creek in your backyard. It might be at the Capitol building when you meet an elected official and try to have a lesson right then and there about issues your kids know about because they live somewhere. And so to try to piece it together. And I think what we try to do in the book is show the breadth of that opportunity and suggest that it doesn't have to all look like this epic around the world journey. It could be, you know, a weekend every couple months that a family goes together and takes the time to discover together and consider something in a different way and wonder about an art piece together. And so it really is, the breadth of opportunity is kind of astounding. And when while traveling, we all felt that sort of time opens up a little bit so you can have these sort of explorations, whether it's domestic or international or epic or humble. It's all a possibility when you're in that mindset of curiosity and wonder.
I might jump on that one too, Julie, because I feel like, you know, in our year overseas, we did have some pretty exotic experiences. We were really out in pushing the limits of the map for sure. And when we came home and started just traveling along the weekends, it was that mindset was easily translated to traveling right around Colorado, right in our backyard, and kind of seeing home with new eyes.
And learning to look at what's happening at home with different lenses. That's the other thing too, is when you step out of your norms, where you grew up, the people you're with, what you know and are comfortable with, when you step out and can look back on even your day-to-day, but also kind of bigger picture, what's going on in the U.S. or what's going on in your state, and you're seeing it from outside and talking with people who are looking outside in, can also really open up your perspective about your home too. We had this really cool experience where my family was in Budapest, and we had linked up with a guide for a day. It was just a really wonderful father who on Sunday afternoons gives tours of the city he loves. And we had done the typical walking tour in the city. And then at the end, he had us avoid a part of the city that there was a protest going on. And he said, watch, this is how they're going to cover this protest. And here's how you hear about it on the local news here in my country and the news back in your country. I'm going to predict that and share it with you. But here's what's really going on. It was sort of the third option. And then later when we watched the news, that was true. Right. So being able to stand outside what you're used to and look at it differently is also something really cool and beautiful to instill in your kids.
Wow. I'm just taking it all in. I do have a question. So traveling with your children can, I'm sure, bring some difficulties in itself, potentially, depending on ages or emotions at the time or big feelings. How did you guys navigate this? And whether it was in an RV or in small rooms, how did you guys kind of bring peace to each other or alone time with constant togetherness during your travels?
So I'll go to...
Go ahead. You can start. Whoever.
I was just going to tell something funny, which is when we picked the... So my family traveled half RV in North America and half backpacking abroad. And when we picked our RV, we picked a very specific unit that gave the kids this little space of their own where a curtain could be drawn. And we even had if the curtain is closed, even with just one kid in there, it's like their space, their alone time. You couldn't disrupt. So there were silly logistical things like that. We also worked to create one-on-one time with parent-kid. Was huge for us as we traveled, to give each other space on siblings, but also space from having your two parents all the time. So we had some, you know, like daily operations kinds of things that really helped. We had carved out quiet time. So whether that was reading or journaling in our family, that was really important to us. We have a number of introverts in our foursome, so that was necessary. And I guess I'll mention last, we also very specifically arranged some of our travel visiting home and visiting people outside our family. So family and friends, we went to some really important events like weddings and, you know, connected with people back home. We built that in, and that helped because our kids could, you know, reconnect with peers that they were missing and spend some time away from the other Heastons.
And I'll share also that we really tried to build in as much rhythm and routine as we could, just to kind of anchor the kids a bit. And by that, you know, it was really having one day on, one day off. So one day on was like out and about doing things, and the day off might be, you know, if we had like an Airbnb or a short-term rental, just staying, you know, staying quote unquote home and kind of doing some schoolwork or doing whatever we needed to do, but just being down. Sometimes I will say when nothing else seemed to be working, we would find a place where we could just swim in a pool. Like that seemed to always make kids happy, especially in really, really hot climates. We just go in and say, how much for the family to use your pool for the day? And maybe it was $20. Like, great. Perfect. And we just spent all day at the pool. The other thing I think that is really helpful is to communicate well if you're traveling with a partner. Like, you know what? I'm not doing well today. I need you to take the lead. And just be able to say that rather than just, you know, trying to do it and then just, you know, exploding in your temper or whatever it is, right? Just really communicating those roles. Especially, you know, before we left, I was, you know, a stay-at-home mom. My husband was the one outside working. And then, you know, when he's not, you know, working outside the home anymore, I needed him to be working as a parent, you know, equally. And so just being able to communicate that is really, really important for everybody's moods.
Yeah. And to add to that, our trip, since we were mostly in the US and we were in an RV or a small motorhome, 24 footer, like it was when things heated up so much less on the road. And I, as I've thought about it and reflected on, you know, what was so different that year, one of the things was like how the day was structured and transitions. I mean, I know you guys know transitions are so hard. Like even if it's from one fun thing to another fun thing, mm-hmm. it's like that forced, like you have to switch your mindset now because we're doing piano. Or for us, it was very different that there was, because we didn't have to be anywhere ever. I mean, yeah, we took a couple planes and we had some meetings and we did some whatever river cleanups. We had to be places. But for the most part, we didn't have that forced hard break between activities. And so it was really part of that deeper inquiry, and it just toned, it made everyone chill out. And it was really, I mean, it really was one of those benefits of being on the road. And, you know, if things did get a little heated, it was also easy being domestic and being in a motorhome to just say, okay, you know, go chop some wood, Johnny, go work on your bike. Like, can you pitch the tent, please? Can you make dinner? You know, there was so much real work to be done every single day just to maintain the lifestyle that I find giving kids real work that like matters, like a shovel, is like a great strategy. And the last thing I'll say is we have an entire chapter in the book called On the Road. And it's so funny to me, funny in a like profoundly interesting way. Like what we talk about in that chapter is not how do you reserve a spot and how, you know, how do you do travel? It's how do you communicate as a family? How can you expect your roles and responsibilities are going to change when you're in travel mode? It's a kind of nuanced take about how a family becomes a traveling unit. And it's so beautiful what happens to families in motion because of experience of having to solve problems in the moment. Like there's like, I can go for a run. I know one of you guys is a big runner. Like, yeah, that was my thing. But it basically, you got to deal with it right then and there. And so it, we all became really good communicators. And today, my kids in college, we had a family meeting today by Zoom because there was some stuff to talk about. So anyway, it just, it was an interesting part of that chapter. Like we're talking about communication here.
Yeah. Communication's a big thing that I'm working on that with my 3 and 4 year old. And obviously they're probably too young to really understand, but I feel like it's never too young.
I think that there's a lot of stuff that, you know, kids that are our kids' age that, mm-hmm. you know, they do understand about communication. I really liked mm-hmm. that you mentioned having the day on and the day off. Mm-hmm. And it made me think like, well, like if for me, when I think of like going and traveling places, for me, it's always, it's like I'm a tourist, you know, and it's every day is planned out or, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's going on like for the 5 days that I'm gone. And then when I get home, I'm like, oh, now I can chill out a little bit, you know, especially if we're traveling with kids. But I like that you didn't have to be doing something every day, you know, that you can plan that out to where it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be anything mm-hmm. wild and crazy. You know, it can be whatever you want it to be for that day. Mm-hmm. And I like that.
I think also, one of the distinctions, we talk about that. I mean, we say one of the biggest tips we can give is to build in downtime. It's huge. And the difference, because most of my travel is what you just described too. I've got, you know, an 8-day vacation and we're going to make sure we fit in what we want to do and see, right? That's the norm. What's interesting and different and hard to have, it was hard for me to wrap my head around, is you're actually picking up your family's life and taking it on the road, right? So it's not the rhythm and pace and planning of a vacation anymore. Yes, you have the travel logistics, but you're picking up all of your family's rhythm and all the things you do together. And that includes downtime and many other things that aren't being out in the world learning, right? It's cooking dinner and it's grocery shopping and it's still going to dentist appointments when you're traveling. So all those things go with you too. So the rhythm is quite different than a vacation. And you have to, I mean, long-term travel it's wonderful. It can also be really tiring, especially for kids, and they need to just chill out sometimes. And so we always encourage families to build that in.
I like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like even with my kids going 4 days to my in-laws' farm, they need one day to recoup.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to think.
Okay.
I'm just amazed. I want to read your book. That's every time. I don't know. Just even looking at your guys's, because, yeah.
And it just came out, right? Yep.
Yesterday.
Yesterday.
Wait, yesterday?
Mm-hmm. That's kind of a big week for us.
Did you guys know that today is National Read a Book Day?
No, I did not know that.
It's a coincidence.
I know.
We love that this is time tonight because we launched yesterday and tomorrow is our launch party. So that's we're getting fantastic. To talk with you right between those.
Yeah,
that's nice. Yeah.
Yes. So tell me how you guys came up with this idea for writing your book. It sounds like you guys are you guys all in the same area now? Mm-hmm. Like living in the same area? First of all, how did you three get connected? And then how did you find out that all three of you traveled? I want to hear the whole thing.
Ani, is that you?
Yeah. So as I was saying before, I knew that I wanted to do this before I had kids. But there was all these logistics, like, you know, what do I do with my taxes? Like so many just random questions that were going through my head. And I knew Julie because our kids went to preschool together. And so I'd gone to her send-off party for her year. And we went, almost 5 years later, something like that. But I knew that I could ask her a lot of these questions, and she was super, super helpful. And then a friend of mine from high school, when I was telling her I was going to do this, she said, oh, I know this woman named Angela who did something similar. And so I got in touch with her, and we went out for lunch, and she just told me so many great things to think about. And with both of them, it was not so much the logistics, which of course it was helpful. But it was the pat on the back encouragement, like you can do this and you're not an irresponsible mom for wanting to do this. And so it was that pat on the back encouragement that meant so, so much. And there was not a book out there. Like I searched and I searched and there was no book out there. And then when I came back from my year, it was like, somebody should have written this book by now. I wonder where the book is. And it wasn't out there. And then kind of what started keeping me up at night is like, huh, maybe I should write that book. And then I reached out to Julie and Angela and said, do you have any interest in writing a book so that we could be helping another mom try to figure out how to do this in the ways that we just helped each other kind of informally? And they were like, yeah, let's do it. So we started slowly, right? And it just kind of started gaining momentum. It was about 4 years in the process from start to yesterday. So yeah, that's kind of how it started.
That is so cool.
We wrote the book we wish we had.
Nice.
And we tried to write it in the voice of those initial conversations we'd had with each other.
I like that.
We wanted it to be a conversation with a trusted friend who is helping you get out and do this. And so that's been our mission all the way through writing the book. And we hope that's the tone that you hear when you read it.
Very cool. I like books like that. Like, when you're reading, it's almost like you're talking and hanging out with a friend. And yes, they're giving you advice, or they're just talking to you.
And then you guys also have a blog on your website. Did a lot of the ideas for your book also come from your blog, or was the blog kind of started after you started your book?
That's a good question. It actually started after the book. We wanted to kind of get the message out that we were doing this. Again, it was really mission driven. It's not like we were like big influencers wanted to reach out to our massive audience. We were more mission-driven, trying to create our audience. And we really started thinking, well, what else would our readers want to know? And what has happened since we wrote the book? So a lot of what's in the blog are kind of, you know, outtakes, and not so much that it's, you know, not as good, but it's just, you know, we kept having to whittle the book down. Like, there was too much, right? And so the things that we take off of the book, we put into the blog. Or like, yeah, I just went to Alabama and toured all around, and so I'm going to be writing about that. Or like, what are some of the other recent destination places we've been writing about?
Well, you went to Africa. Annika just went to Kenya and Egypt and did some really cool sort of, how do you plan a trip like that? And, but also it's like, what are the hot topics and what are people thinking about, like AI, and how does that influence a curriculum, and how would that play into how parents think about, I mean, both the travel planning piece, but also the education piece, and what does that mean? So it's really fun to keep, because, you know, we've learned so much and we feel like, I guess we're experts. We wrote a book. We're obviously learning more every single day and love the topic and want to go as deep as we can. So there's just a lot more to share. And the other thing the blog has done is, there are amazing people out there traveling, whether they're thought leaders in certain, you know, topics like finding community and building community in the world, or people who are traveling currently. And so we want to also bring their voices to this community. And so there's been a really cool, I'll let you guys talk about the name of it. It's a really cool series where we've met fascinating people and invite them to sort of tell their story. And then we help push it out. And just to, again, build this wondrous conversation is how we like to think of it, and just keep getting more and more people at the table. But do you want to talk about Fernway Families, Angela?
So we named it Fernway Families, and that's, longing for distance, or?
It's like the opposite of homesickness, you know?
Yes. It's far sickness. Thank you, Julie.
Far sickness. You're
that's
like,
what it is.
Get out there.
Yeah. It's a German word for far sickness, and it's a longing to be out in the world. We called it Fernway Families, and this is actually one of my favorite aspects of writing the book, researching the book, and ongoing conversation is, you know, we're community members too. we're followers too. Like, we love seeing what other families are doing. So we interview families who are out there. And it's really always been very important to us to represent the diversity of families and diversity in all ways, where they're from, how many kids they have. We talked about kids' ages, what they're doing, slow travel, fast travel. So we're always trying to represent that. So we interview families who are out there now and they share their stories, and we have some really interesting questions that they share with us, and we profile them, and then we try to build their followers too. So it's a giving back to the community, and also just, you know, watching from afar what families are doing out there today since we're currently at home.
That's so neat. I like that you brought other people into it.
Yeah, it really seems like the opportunities are kind of endless. You know, like, there's so many things that you guys can talk about as far as all of it goes, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's some families that are on boats. You know, they're boat schoolers. They're
really?
Yeah, there's some people that cycle with their little kids, like, across continents. I mean, people are doing amazing things. And it's, you know, I feel like one of the common themes in talking with families, both that we interviewed for the book and the Fernway families, is that sometimes parents can kind of feel like they're starting to lose their identity in, like I have this adventurous spirit, but I need to kind of tamp it down while my kids are young. And I feel like if you can find a way that's good for everybody, it just makes you a better parent to kind of keep that, keep your own flame alive, whatever it is that it's your flame.
I love that.
Same.
Yeah.
I could see myself dimming my flame with being a parent.
Yes.
Because you try to do so many things and then you can lose yourself in parenthood. And it's so really hard.
I think we've talked about that. Like,
we have.
At least on one of our episodes, we've talked about it, how, like, you kind of start, not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily start like when you find your spouse or whatever, but you go from being who you are before you meet your spouse, and then you're a wife or you're a partner or whatever. And then you have your kids, and then that part of your life is over. You know what I mean? And it really does kind of, like, the flame does kind of dim with each, you know, and it's kind of like, how can you keep that spark alive a little bit, you know? So I like that.
It's a really dynamic space too. I mean, family travel is trending, you know, the industry is responding, and they'd be silly not to, because if you're the industry, it represents this other market. And so they're responding and recognizing that travelers look like all different types of people, and families look like all different types of families. And they're making more and more opportunities for traveling families to get into the world, and recognizing that they want to make that a possibility for them. And so, I mean, I think it's, you know, we're seeing great growth in that. We're seeing a growth in multi-generational travel. We're seeing a growth in international travel for families, where before it was more like this epic thing to go overseas, but it's now, it's possible, and there's incentives to do that. And there's, the industry is responding. And I mean, I think that's really, really encouraging. And, you know, one of the things I love that, what Ani was sharing, and, you know, in the book, we talk about the gems of the journey. And one of the things we talk about that's so beautiful is a traveling parent is, like, yeah, a lot of people who travel as parents traveled as youngsters. And so, like, when you're out there with your kids, it's like your joy kind of multiplies, because first you have your experience, and then you pause, you stop, and you look at your kids and you see their experience. And so then you get to have that joy again. And it's really true. I mean, it's a really cool thing. Of course, Angela talks so eloquently. It's not all sunshine and roses. Like, there is an underbelly, and sometimes things go wrong, but mostly it's really great. And we want to encourage, that's why we wrote this book, is, like, when I came back, I wanted to climb up on a mountain and scream, like, do it, go, you can do it. And when Ani said, let's write this book, I'm like, heck yeah, I'm in. Let's do it. You know, let's help people get out there.
Just hearing you talk, Julie, about like traveling internationally, which I know you guys have talked a lot about. I think my brother would highly enjoy this book. He has a 9-month-old daughter, and him and his wife talk about traveling all the time with her. And it must be generational because my mom is an amazing person. But every time my brother talks about traveling with my niece, like internationally, mom's like, you can't do that. I'll take care of her. You guys go. And my brother's like, no, we're bringing her. She's going to get used to us traveling regularly. And mom's like, no, you can't do that. So I feel like generationally, they think, I don't know, at least that's how I see it. And a lot of people that we talk to, they're like, no, you can't do that. You have kids.
Multiply that by saying you're going on the road for a year. And one of the things we really try to do for people considering this is say you're not crazy. I mean, mm-hmm. Annika hinted at this earlier. It's not crazy to want to do this with your family. There are ways to make it happen. And there are a lot of people out there to tell you exactly that it's not a wild idea that can't be done. It actually can be. Here's the way. Let us walk you through it. We're going to help you remove the hurdles and try to just listen to your own voice around it versus all of the you're going to do what responses that are going to come your way because they do. And a lot of that is people trying to project themselves into it and thinking about their own difficulties. And you just have to know what works for your own family. You know your own family better than anyone ever will. And you know what your kids want to do and will respond to. And you sort of just have to take a leap of faith with that.
I like that.
I feel like we have covered a lot. Mm-hmm. A lot. Is there anything that you feel like we have not touched on during this interview that you would like to talk about?
No, I will share one thing that I've been realizing just lately. Well, I've often said that one of the things that was my favorite result of our travels was that my kids said, no, the world isn't scary. It's actually full of a lot of really, really nice people. Like, people are good and kind. And you watch the news, and I don't think that's what a kid feels. But that's what my kids feel often is, no, everyone in China's nice, you know, when it's getting slammed in the news. Or Africa, everybody comes out of their homes and wants to help and wants to be kind and friendly. And it's just not sometimes the image we see as Americans. And with that, I feel like that just the amount of kindness that came toward us on our year is something that myself and my kids and my husband are going to spend a lifetime kind of digesting and giving back. In that, like, just hosting people is an art form. And we have a lot to learn, I think, of just being open-hearted hosts, just as individuals and as a country, I guess, in some ways. Yeah, it's just really taught us that kindness is really our common language if we interact with the world with open hearts ourselves.
I love that, Ani. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'll add one, two quick thoughts. One, just to go back to something you said, Sam, about, like, you know, your kid is 3 and 4 and how, you know, can they, encouraging them already to communicate and engage. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like my son, Johnny, emerged from our year, like, knowing he has agency and that his contribution matters. And like, if he didn't do it, he didn't check the oil on our rig, we might overheat. You know, if he didn't speak up about a navigational problem, because he was tracking the maps and everything, like we might get lost. And so I feel like at the youngest age, helping our kids express their feelings and their desires, and for the parents to consider it, you know, and it might be, it might not work, or it might work and it might change our mind. And so I think that was one of the really cool things. Like, I think parenting made me a, traveling made me a better parent because of that, because of seeing my son know that what he was saying was being heard. So that's one thing. And I think we can do that with really young kids. Mm-hmm. And the second is on a little bit my, not to be like on a grandstand here, but I also want to just say one word about sustainable travel. Sometimes, you know, we think we'll just sort of compromise on the convenience piece and kind of take the more convenient path because we're traveling and whatever, but there's so much opportunity to have a positive impact with our travel choices today that we cover it in the book. I mean, it's not a huge part, but it's certainly a huge part of what we think is possible, and would just want to encourage people who are preparing to travel to know that there are options out there where they can support local economies, they can preserve local cultures, they can really have their travel dollars do good in the world. And there's so many opportunities and so many outfitters and accommodations and airlines and, you know, guides who are committed and working toward that shared goal. Because if we don't, we're going to destroy all of these beautiful places that we're going to experience. And so I think there's a great opportunity today to really align our values, and would encourage people. It's fun. And often those more sustainable activities and choices result in the more fun experience anyway. That was certainly our experience. So I just wanted to throw that in there. I hope that's okay.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I like that you guys added that into your book.
I'll just add one quick thing as a final thought, which is we've touched on how cool it was as world schoolers to get to follow curiosity. And particularly letting our kids follow their true interests and curiosities. It's just a little anecdote that we all three have a child in college now who is studying something that was seeded in our travel years. And to see that years later be something they're really turning into potential futures for themselves, and know it was turned on in those early years, is pretty cool watching that come to fruition.
That is very cool.
It's amazing. Oh my gosh. I've enjoyed talking to you ladies and hearing you speak. I think I could listen to you guys all night, but obviously yeah, we don't
I
have
also
that.
Can talk to you guys all night. Yeah.
So kind. We are here as resources. If you're going to ever embed even a world schooling perspective in any kind of travel, you're welcome to reach out to us. We love those kind of conversations. So just know we can be a resource for you if you're interested.
So I ask this to pretty much all of the guests that we have come on. So you guys can go in whatever order you want to go.
I said, I feel like your answers are going to be amazing.
I bet they're going to be really good.
The pressure's on.
Okay.
This is a great question.
So my question is, if you could reach anybody who might be listening, who might be considering taking their own extended travel experience with their families, but maybe they're on the fence, maybe they, you know, maybe they're just considering it, what would you say to them and why?
We try to be careful to say, you know, we started out saying everybody can do this, right? And we try to be thoughtful about that because people do have reasons that it's difficult. They might have a family member to take care of. They might have other priorities at home. They might have a job that doesn't allow them to work remotely. But what we like to say is if it's a priority and they want to, that there are so many creative ways to make it happen that might not be the first thing they think of. And what we've tried to offer as a service is all the things that are possible, all the ways they might be able to. So I would just offer a vote of encouragement and to share that there are a lot of resources and people in the community to help them make it happen.
And I'll add to that by saying that I have met so many people just literally in the last week when I'm talking about my book who say, I wanted to do that. And the years slipped away and I never did it. I always wanted to do that. I've heard about those families that get out there and do that. So I hear about people who regret not doing it just because it's never a convenient time, right? There's never like, oh, this is a really easy year to take off, right? It's a lot of logistics. And of all the people I interviewed for the book, nobody regretted it. I can't say that that listener, you know, would regret it or not, but I can say of the hundreds, literally, of families that we've been in touch with through the course of this book, nobody regretted it.
I will add to that that, you know, this travel is just, it's definitely about the adventure and the places you go, and you don't have to do all the like top 10 lists or the bucket lists, but you can even do like the next tier of really cool things. But it's also it's about what happens is transformational. And travel lets you kind of get in the driver's seat of your life, making a choice to do this. And, you know, like Ani said, there's no right time. It's really choosing to make it happen. And the tidbit of advice I would give is if there is concern and fear to, you know, we talk about it in the book, a great strategy is to have a contingency plan, you know, to have a fallback plan, friends that you might be able to stay with or parents you might be able to move in with if you have to cut your trip short. That there's all millions and millions of ways to do it. And if you can sort of plan for a fallback if you need to, that might take away some of the fear of, oh my gosh, what if, you know, what if it doesn't work? So I'd say talk to a friend, read the book. We try to cover all those fears and concerns and start saving.
And it's not all or nothing. I just want to add, just based on listening to Julie, it's not all or nothing. You can do it in little pieces. You can go closer to home. You can go for shorter periods of time and see if it works and then decide if you want to grow up from there. Maybe you just always have a world schooling philosophy mindset in all the things you're doing with your kids close to home.
Love it.
Me too.
Yes. Thank you guys so much for coming on and talking about just everything about world schooling and your own experiences. I was so excited to have you on, and I'm so glad we did.
Me too. I'm glad your friend told you we should interview them.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Katie, for reaching out. And thank you, Angela, for sending us an email.
Yeah. Thank you for inviting us. And shout out to Katie Kelly for me. I'll just say that. Different last name at the time. But thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely.
And for all of our followers, if you've been listening to us for this episode, again, you can find them at wonderyear.com. And if you would like to have any more Mother of All Podcasts information your way, you can find us at motherofallpodcast.com. But you can also find us on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Mother of All Podcasts. Our podcast is recorded and edited by Sam and Taylor using Spotify for Podcasters. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe to our show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And if you really liked us, you can find us online for more information at www.motherofallpodcast.com or on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. And we will see you next week. Thank you.